Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have crazy, crazy, and crazy martinis for you today. All three are crazy. But we do want to tell you we're sponsored again today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And Jim, before we actually get into the martinis, I think most rational people saw it coming. A lot of people around Washington thought that yesterday would be the greatest day in the history of Washington professional sports because the Capitals were finally going to get out of the second round of the NHL playoffs. The Wizards were going to be on the brink of going to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since the 70s. Yeah, didn't happen. And it's pouring down rain today, so that kind of reflects the whole mood around this town because history has repeated itself once again.
The weather forecast called for heavy metaphors. You know, I'm not a diehard Capitals or Wizards fan, but you live in the D.C. area. You notice that the people around you generally are happier when the local sports teams do better. And everybody kind of got their hopes up, and then they came crashing down last night. I think between the Nationals, Capitals, I don't know if the Wizards qualify for this quite yet. They've kind of cornered the market on being really good in the regular season and then doing nothing or next to nothing in the postseason, which is, it's kind of a particular cruelty of the sports gods. You know, you're really good when it doesn't matter that much. It's like being the kings of the preseason.
All right. Let's move on now to the first crazy martini. And for that, we go to the pages of the Hill newspaper and Mike Lee, perhaps one of my favorite United States senators. He's certainly on the short list. Senator Mike Lee floated on Thursday that President Trump should nominate Merrick Garland, former President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, to be the next FBI director. In a tweet, quote, "Instead of a special prosecutor, @RealDonaldTrump should nominate Merrick Garland to replace James Comey," Lee wrote on Twitter Thursday morning. Now, a lot of sites thought that was facetious, but The Hill reports Con Carroll, spokesman for the Utah Republican, added that the GOP senator was not joking about making the Obama nominee the head of the FBI. Quote, "He's eminently qualified and has the reputation needed to restore public confidence in the FBI," he told The Hill. He also tweeted that Merrick Garland has extensive prosecutorial experience, including overseeing the Oklahoma City bombing investigation. So, Jim, on the one hand, I could see this possibly cooling off the rage of the Democrats and perhaps their demand for a special prosecutor, although I think that horse is out of the barn from their PR perspective at this point. Although, to be sure, making Democrats happy ought not to be the number one priority of this administration. The downside of this, though, is that pushing for something like this is almost an admission that somehow Merrick Garland got rooked for the Supreme Court spot.
There's that angle. I think part of the fun would be whether Democrats would just out of habit denounce Merrick Garland because Trump's appointing him. You know, Greg, we can't trust someone who investigated Marion Barry. He's racist. Based on his experience, in his previous work, Merrick Garland would probably be perfectly fine. And he was, as far as the type of person who'd be nominated by President Obama to be a Supreme Court justice, he's about as rightward as we're going to get. Like I said, pretty, strong, like definitely a law and order sort of guy. And, he would probably serve the country. And oh, by the way, if we nominated Garland, that creates an opening on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which would be it's got 7 Democrats, 4 Republican appointees, and all of a sudden, Trump gets to replace Garland there. Now, the thing is, this is all kind of, the idle chit chat. It doesn't really amount to much because it's not very it's not likely Trump will make the offer. It's not particularly likely that Merrick Garland would accept it because really, Greg, would you rather have a lifetime appointment to a really important court? Or would you rather get a temporary gig under Trump where, for all we know, there's an excellent chance 6 months from now he fires you because he didn't like something you said in testimony?
Tough choice. Tough choice.
Right? I mean, why give up the really great job you love and you're currently doing to be FBI director under President Trump where he's going to fume if you, make any decision he doesn't like? And your continued employment remains on being in the good graces of President Trump. you know, understandably not likely to make that deal. But I salute Mike Lee for out of the box thinking. Apparently, Democratic senators like, yeah, that'd be a good idea. They're biting on the bait. Theoretically, we could get that opening, get another Republican judge in there. Not likely to happen, but our happy thought of the day, because the rest of the thoughts really aren't that happy.
No. It's fun. It's funny about the Democrats and Merrick Garland. Obviously, they're talking mostly about the process. But do you remember kind of the grassroots, if that even exists in the Democratic Party, their initial reaction to Obama nominating Garland and the fact that he was a white male? They were not at all happy about that. So while he's become the cause celeb and they might get behind him if Trump actually were to do something like this, let's not pretend that he was warmly welcomed by the base.
How would Obama respond to that? like would Democrats really, like, you know, deep down, Democrats wouldn't really want to endorse it. They'd actually be irritated by it. But how do you go on and say, look, he's totally qualified for the Supreme Court, but completely unqualified to run the FBI? I guess you can try to make that argument.
You got any favorites for this position?
Yeah. Two longstanding figures. They haven't been in the spotlight in a while. Gordon Cole, who was the regional bureau chief up in the Pacific Northwest for a long time. And then, of course, Walter Skinner, who handled the X-Files back in the 90s. Gordon Cole was from Twin Peaks for all of our listeners out there. So. My favorite candidates don't technically exist, but they've always epitomized what I wanted to see in the FBI.
Well, just to test how good how close the connections are with the Russians, you know, there's a guy named Jonathan, usually goes by Jack Bauer, who I believe is still in Russian custody, I think would be very, very aggressive at the FBI.
You know, you and I can both give a lot of good reasons for him, but damn it, we don't have time to explain. The second thing is that, you know, there are two other names that you and I immediately would think of. A lot of people disagree with some of their decisions, thought they could be a little bit of a gung-ho cowboy, but I think they always attacked every problem head on, whether it's Agent Johnson or Agent Johnson. No relation, but I think they always epitomized also what we've come to expect from the FBI.
Well, that's true, but there's a small problem. We're going to need some more FBI guys, I guess. Yes, that's a diehard reference. Okay, pop culture segment over. Let's move on to the second crazy martini now. And Jim, it turns out the official explanation for the Comey firing, at least according to the Washington Post and Politico and some other places now, not exactly the end of the story, and perhaps not even most of the story. Here's what the Washington Post reports. The private accounts of more than 30 officials at the White House, the Justice Department, the FBI, and on Capitol Hill, as well as Trump confidants and other senior Republicans, paint a conflicting narrative centered on the president's brewing personal animus towards Comey. Many of those interviewed spoke on the condition of anonymity in order to candidly discuss internal deliberations. Trump was angry that Comey would not support his baseless claim that President Barack Obama had his campaign offices wiretapped. Trump was frustrated when Comey revealed in Senate testimony the breadth of the counterintelligence investigation into Russia's effort to sway the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And he fumed that Comey was giving too much attention to the Russia probe and not enough to investigating leaks to journalists. Then there's this, as you put in the Morning Jolt, this unnerving detail. Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general who wrote the memo, threatened to resign after the narrative emerging from the White House on Tuesday evening cast him as a prime mover of the decision to fire Comey, and that the president acted only on his recommendation, said the person close to the White House who spoke on the condition of anonymity because of sensitivity to the matter. You also point out that Josh Dazzi at Politico did not like the way Comey was referring to the investigation about Russia during his public testimony. And Mike Allen over at Axios, having Republicans just apoplectic about how amateurish the public relations handling of this was. And part of it, of which, of course, is that the communication staff didn't know about it until it actually happened. So, Jim, what do we pull away from this?
Yeah, look, this is a lot of folks inside the White House, inside the FBI, and throughout the government offering, you know, unidentified anonymous comments, but they all have the ring of truth. I haven't seen anything directly contradictory of that. I think the one that jumps out the most is this report that Rosenstein threatened to resign after the, you know, messaging from the White House Tuesday evening said that this was the guy who was really the prime mover on the decision to fire Comey, and the president acted only on his recommendation. Now, a lot of people are giving Rosenstein grief and saying, wait a second. If you write a letter to the president saying, Mr. President, I think, you know, it's perfectly fine to fire the FBI director because of reasons X, Y, and Z, you shouldn't be that shocked when the White House says, oh, by the way, here's the letter that justifies the president's decision. I you know, like the one, what did you think he was going to do with that letter, Mr. Rosenstein?
Yeah.
But then having said that, look, you know, if Rosenstein does resign anytime in the next couple of days or weeks, then it really is, you know, turns into a major crisis, because the guy who was the White House's justification, saying, look, it's not just us, the partisans who did this. It's not just the president who allegedly is worried about where the Russia investigation is going. You know, we don't know whether there's actually any collusion to find or to indict anyone over or anything like that. But let's assume, you know, that's the case. Jeff Sessions said he was going to recuse himself from all things related to this. And then he signed off on the firing of Comey, which, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you got a really malleable definition of recusal. And then you got then you have Rosenstein. But Rosenstein was the outsider. Rosenstein was the nonpartisan guy, the career justice and lawyer guy. I'd say, no, he looked at it and he gave the justification for it. So, you know, you're really in a situation where I also kept saying I wanted to see more of an explanation from the White House to say, look, there's a case to be made. Yes, the FBI would be well served with new leadership. It's been a long and tumultuous year. Comey has made a lot of enemies. You could justifiably say it's not best for the Bureau and it's not best for the country if one of the two major political parties is using him as their primary scapegoat for why they lost a presidential election. You could say, look, you can even say, look, Comey, it's not your fault, but we need a fresh face in there to get people beyond all this. But that's not really what we're getting. And I went back and I looked in the morning jolt about all the various problems that have happened in the FBI under Comey's watch. I don't think they're particularly terrible or outstanding or worse than previous directors. But, you know, he did botch a point in his testimony last week. There have been continuing questions about the FBI crime lab. The number of times you and I have discussed where people who are on FBI terrorism watch list then go on and do something. And you and I had joked about how Disney had done more to stop the Orlando shooter than the FBI did. The fact that they spent, I only found this when I looked into it this morning, in order to open up the iPhone of that shooter out in San Bernardino. Remember, there's that whole argument. They wanted Apple to get the access code. Apple said no. They were going to argue about it. And they ended up paying $1.3 million to some unidentified outside source who managed to crack the code. Now, maybe you got to do these sorts of things when you're involved in really high-profile in terrorism investigations. Maybe the stakes are worth it. But one, that's a heck of a lot of money. And two, I don't know, is this some guy sitting in his basement who's a hacker? I mean, like, you know, who did we pay this money to? Are we putting money in the hands of people we think of as being shady or unethical or stuff like that? You could have looked at Comey's record and found reasons to say, you know, this maybe it's really time for a change. He's made some decisions that have not worked out well. But instead, we got he just wasn't doing a good job in Trump's lone statement yesterday. And that's not enough. And I think that if you're going to make a decision like this, you know, as I said yesterday, you need to have your ducks all in a row. There's no indication that the White House did this. This looks very impulsive. This looks very arbitrary. And once again, this is an entirely self-inflicted problem for the White House that they're going to spend God knows how many weeks and months dealing with the fallout of.
A couple of quick things. Perhaps the fact that Sessions was involved is one of the reasons why the explanation for this from Rosenstein had nothing to do with Russia, and therefore Sessions believed he could weigh in on it, even though obviously the FBI is investigating Russia. The other thing, and you mentioned it at the beginning of your response, Jim, but I want to just dive into it briefly a little deeper. The very first sentence here, the private accounts of more than 30 officials at the White House, the Justice Department, the FBI, all speaking anonymously. Do we ever see a Democratic administration where the story is not positive towards the administration, where the reporters can find that many people willing to go off the record but talk like this?
The really ominous thing is how much of this is coming from the White House.
Right.
People you'd think were on Team Trump and would not be eager to speak critically of the boss. And I don't know whether these people are upset because they weren't in the loop, or going to have to deal with the fallout from this. It certainly looks like that a bunch of Spicer told people they were done for the day right before the word came out earlier this week. You want to talk about not being in the loop. The communications team has to be in a position to make the argument. And clearly they were sent out blind. And that's why I had so many contradictory explanations of why this was. And then, of course, heading, you know, I don't know whether to blame Sarah Huckabee Sanders for going out and saying that Comey had committed atrocities, you know, like Assad. I mean, I don't know if I should put that on her or whether I should, you know, kind of say, look, if you send her out there without a good, well thought out argument that's been checked out by the lawyers, what's she supposed to do? Of course, she's going to have to think on her feet, and some of the stuff that's going to come out of her mouth is going to be less than fully plausible.
You think Sean Spicer's really glad he's doing Naval Reserve duty this week?
I think I'm going to need to stay a little more time out here. We got a real problem. You know. That's right. If you need me in Syria or anything like that, I could, you know.
Well, I'm sure President Trump listens to the podcast, and he's got a big decision now that he's got to make on who to hire to be the next FBI director. And there's a lot of names out there, and given the impulsive nature that we've witnessed this week, he might make that fairly soon. But the good news is he can make a decision fairly quickly, but also thoroughly, thanks to ZipRecruiter. Just like Donald Trump, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates.
If you want to find the perfect hire, whether it's for FBI director or any other position, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 200 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with just a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface.
So no more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can screen candidates quickly, you can rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial and find out what you've been missing that all those other companies have found to be very, very helpful for their hiring practices. Okay, on to the third and final crazy martini now, Jim. And as if the first two weren't odd enough, let's inject Michael Flynn back into the situation. This is courtesy of the Daily Beast. White House lawyers have had to warn President Donald Trump repeatedly against reaching out to his fired national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Two people familiar with the matter tell the Daily Beast. Shockingly, they're not on the record. Trump, angered by press coverage of the Russia investigation and General Flynn, has asked senior staff and the White House counsel's office multiple times if it was appropriate to reach out to the fired national security advisor. According to a source close to Flynn and a Trump administration official with direct knowledge of the exchanges. Quote, while the president does not regret firing General Flynn, he feels he is a good man who served his country bravely and honorably and who is being treated unfairly by the press and the Democrats on Capitol Hill, another Trump administration official said. These officials requested anonymity as a condition of discussing legal advice to the president. But here's why the counsel keeps saying no. If Trump spoke directly with Flynn amid ongoing investigations, it could be portrayed as witness tampering. Such conversations would create huge issues, according to National Security Attorney Brad Moss. Quote, talking with witnesses got Nixon in trouble. The last thing they would want is an allegation of conspiracy, witness tampering, or coordination, said Mark Zaid, Moss's partner, in an email. If Flynn is going to be indicted or certainly under investigation, then I would want the president to be as far away from him as possible. So we just found out, Jim, that Flynn has been subpoenaed by the Senate Intelligence Committee, especially after refusing to turn over various documents. So on the one hand, you could probably look at this and say Trump has a sense of loyalty to those who have been loyal to him. On the other hand, there's just plain common sense.
Let's take this report and Trump's the description of Trump's motivation at his word. That you know, he feels bad for Flynn. He feels like he's getting a lot of criticism that is undeserved, that he, you know, wants to send him a message to say, hey, chin up, or cheer him up, or you know, thank him for his service or something like that. Okay, fine. That's a you know, decent and compassionate thing to want to do. But one, when you're president of the United States, certain things, and you're in the middle of a investigation of things like this, there's certain things you just can't do. And two, it almost makes you wonder how much Trump thinks getting rid of Flynn was the right decision. Because why was Flynn let go? Well, because the biggest and clearest reason was he had allegedly lied to Mike Pence about the content of his conversations with the Russian ambassador. And then Pence had to go out there, and Pence was found to be making statements that weren't true. And for obvious reasons, this left Pence really irked. When shortly before Flynn departed, the question was, look, if you have an administration where nobody trusts the national security advisor, you know, can he do his job, right? But you're basically, you can't function if everybody else on the team doesn't trust you. Then the second thing is that, look, you know, what we've learned since then is that, you know, Michael Flynn had his lobbying firm that had clients that were close to the Turkish government throughout the 2016 campaign. When he was sitting in with the classified briefings for then candidate Trump, and that this was bad, not just bad judgment on Flynn's part. I don't know if it'd be it's too harsh to say it's a act of disloyalty, but it's certainly bad judgment, and it certainly put Trump in a really awkward spot. If you have a gig in which you're getting paid by a foreign entity, you got to disclose that. It turns out Flynn did not file the proper paperwork for all that. It was close to $500,000. Everybody's kind of laughing. How do you forget about getting paid $500,000 from a foreign company? Whatever you think of Trump, Flynn did not serve the president well, right? He had to disclose that stuff. He had to disclose that stuff to other people around Trump. He had to, at some point, he should have said, look, either I can be a lobbyist for a foreign entity, or I can be advising a U.S. presidential candidate. But you can't do both. And Flynn insisted upon doing both. And that's where the real problem was, that he kept getting, you know, the payment from RT TV, going to Russia for the RT event, sitting at Putin's table. Look, you can do all that stuff. You just can't go back into government service again. You can't collect money from other entities. And let's face it, RT is basically run and paid for by the Kremlin. You can't take Russian money and then go back into jobs working for the U.S. government. People are going to think you have dual loyalties. And this stuff is just so obvious and so glaring. And Flynn just kind of, you know, shrugs it all off. And now with this, it certainly looks like Trump wants to shrug it all off, because clearly he's itching to give up, give Flynn a call and chew the fat. And Mr. President, no, you can't. You can't do that, because it's only going to create more problems for you down the road. So deeply frustrating, deeply unnerving. And, you know, not the first time this week where we've kind of left scratching our heads wondering, like, does Trump even understand what his own best interest is? Does Trump even understand how he has to protect himself in situations like this? Because otherwise he's kind of, you know, just he keeps putting the fork into the electric socket. Right. You think after the first time he'd stop.
This would be a great week to pass health care or tax reform.
The irony is, heading into this week, Trump was having a good week. Things were looking up. You know, between this and most of his other late night tweet storms and things, you notice Trump, all like, whenever Trump, the things start going well for Trump, that's when all of a sudden he just kind of has this urge to do something really counterproductive and hurts his own interests. He's got zero impulse control. And if he could just get out of his own way, he would probably be a much more successful president.
All right. Well, eventful day. Let's say that much. Crazy day all the way across the board. Jim, we'll see what Friday holds.
It's not Friday yet, Greg.
We said that on Monday, and it's still not Friday.
One of these days it will be.
Now it's still not Friday, and it's raining.
At least we're not Capitals fans.
Jim Carrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And don't forget, right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.